Alrighty, welcome everyone. This is W2TTT, K2BAR. Are there any stations with emergency air priority traffic? Please call QBAR. Alrighty, as I say, there's nothing heard on that one, which is a good thing. Alright, welcome everyone. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Chestnut Ridge Radio Club Technical Net, conducted every Thursday night. And, oh wow, what happened? The sonic is closed. No lights, that's not a good thing. Why do I think that they're not in business anymore? Alright, alright, so this is the Bergen Amateur Association Chestnut Ridge Radio Club Thursday Night Technical Net, and we're here to have a conversation about amateur radio. Electronics and computing and the underlying science for it all, how we serve others, how we explore the technology, and some of the adventures we've had, things we'd like to do, things we don't want to do ever again, and the like. So, anywho, it should be an interesting net. The format's a little different than what you're used to. Yeah, by the way, just FYI, the Sonic on Route 17 is temporary closure due to fire damage. Okay, anyway, so moving right along. The way this net is conducted, it's done with an order list. We ask for whether or not people have a question, a comment, a for sale, swap, or wanted item, some combination of those things, or none of the above. You might ask, why would I check in if it's none of the above? So that we can focus the net on the needs of those who are participating. And if you don't check in, you're not participating. Well, maybe you are, but very passively, and that's not much of a contribution. So checking in adds to the net so that we understand who we're dealing with and how we need to address their needs. So do check in. We'll do that in an orderly manner, which I'll get to in a minute, but I do want to point out this net is conducted on a frequency 146.955 megahertz, the 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club located in Alpine, New Jersey. PL is 141.3, and the offset is -600. You can also get in via Echolink, and we will have a separate Echolink check-in on K2 Foxtrot Juliet-Lima. K2 Foxtrot Juliet-Lima. So that's how you get into the Echolink. And we'll do that after the RF check-ins. So do stand by if you're on Echolink. So we check in with our call sign, our name. We give, I did all that. So we do this by call sign group. There we go. Let's do that. Let's start with kilos. We rarely start with kilos these days. Kilo 2s specifically. Please call K2BAR.
K2EIR, how are you in Tarrytown? None of the above. Good evening.
Okay, come aboard. And the other Kilo 2s.
K2GFM, Greg and Montvale, just listening tonight.
Being Greg, K2GFM. Any other kilos?
Connected, W2LCN. Connected, N2OEL.
Yeah, I recognize LCN and OEL. We'll get to you guys in a bit. All right, very good. Any other Kilo 2s? Okay, the balance of all kilos.
Oh, Delta 2, Delta India Golf, Don, Massapequa, none of the above. Good evening.
Okay, could you repeat your call sign one more time, please?
Kilo Delta 2, Delta India Golf.
Very good. And your name and your intention?
Don in Massapequa, none of the above. Good evening, Gordon.
I'm sorry, Don. I'm just a little slow on the uptake today, so forgive me. Alrighty. Very good, Don. Welcome over. Any other kilos? Okay, let's try.
N2OEL.
Oh. Okay, Noel, we got you on Echolink. And what are your intentions since you're there anyway? 2, November, Bravo, Romeo, John, and no intentions at this time. Okay, the intentionless John at 2NBR, W2TDTK2BAR. All right, very good, John. Welcome aboard. Thank you for that nice QSO the other night, by the way. All right, any other members? Hey, Whiskeys.
Good evening, Gordon. This is Jim, WA2UMP in Pearl River, with a question.
Good evening, Jim. WA2UMP, we got you. Any other Whiskeys?
Whiskey 2, Lima Charlie, November. The name is Rick in Bloomingdale. I have a comment.
Hey, Rick, good evening. You said you had a question. A comment, sir. Hey, Nancy caught comment. All right. Any other Whiskeys?
Whiskey 2, November, Papa Radio. Hector, no comments or questions at this time. Good evening, Gordon. Good evening, all.
Yeah, so we have Whiskey 2, NPR, and we have N2NBR. Okay, what the heck. Good evening, Hector. Good hearing you. Alrighty. Any other Whiskeys? No, Novembers, I'm sorry. No, it was Whiskeys, I'm sorry, Whiskeys.
Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy, Washington Township, with a comment.
Most excellent, Mr. Randy. Gotcha. Any other Whiskeys?
2R, Charlie, no questions. No comments. Just listen.
Hey, good evening, Charlie. You know, Charlie, I think you actually have more check-ins than anybody else on this net. Flat out. Started. I think so. I even think you have more than Jim Joyce, which is truly amazing, or Tony Izzo. Alrighty. Very good. Any other Whiskey? Hey, Alphas? Any Alpha stations?
AC2GI, Rich, no questions, no comments.
What? You're not using your American Express card traveling?
Hey, I actually got 4 days without being on the road in the last month.
Good God. It's good to hear you. Okay, what are your intentions? Oh, just nothing. Yeah, nothing. All right, Nancy. Yeah, Nancy's questioning whether I'm paying attention. Well, there is that. All right. I mean, I have Nancy and Randy to keep me honest here, so I'm pretty much covered. All right, let's see. Any other Alphas? Okay, very good. Any other stations on the repeater?
W2LCN, timeout.
Okay, very good. Anybody else on that calling? Alrighty. Then let us in with a couple of quick announcements. Number one announcement, Jim Jackson, NS2K update. He is resting comfortably, said in a bad way, in a good place. So pretty much time for prayers, because that's all that's left to do of that. Another call about a half hour ago, and very comfortable. He's not communicating except through him. He is not able to. That's pretty much where hers would be appreciated for our friend Jim Jackson. That's okay. All right. Not sure who gets the first question or comment. Mr. Randy, I'll let you pick him.
First on the list this evening is Jim from Pearl River with a question.
Okay. Thank you, Randy. Well, first question, it's a two-part question, and basically I'm getting ready to put two antennas in the attic and going to be doing a little soldering. The soldering iron I have is something left over from the 70s, and I'm looking to purchase something fairly good. So I'm looking for a recommendation for a soldering station, something maybe roughly in the $100 price range, and I'll let it drop. There's a second part to it.
Well, that's a really good question. So, you know, there's some hot, pretty pricey stations out there, but I have a Chinese knockoff solder station that has temperature control. That's actually pretty wonderful. It's got that you know, powder blue kind of color. It sort of looks like a Weller. It's not quite as nice as a Weller solder station, but works for my purposes, and bring up the temperature to, I guess, what, 800 degrees. I think it's pretty good. I think it only cost me $50, $60 at the most. In fact, I think, if I recall, they even sell that model over the counter at Wayne Electronics on their racks. I won't say it's at the counter, but but you can also order it from your choice of vendors or front people for the People's Liberation Army.
Do you know the name of it, Gordon?
No, I don't, but I think if you just Google solder station, look for one that's powder blue, it's got a little pan for, or actually it's not even a metal pan, it's a plastic pan for, that's molded into the top for the included sponge, which I've since lost because I replace periodically with either another piece of kitchen sponge that's seen better days, or I take a paper towel and fold it up and wet it and leave it there. Any of those solutions work fine, but anyway, but it's a Weller-like solder station.
Well, it's also imported from China, and it was for $89. I think it was like Extronics or something. It got a good review, and it came with a free, well, it came with a magnifying light, a x5 magnifier with a fluorescent light and a tweezer, which I really don't need. But it got a good review. I imagine that's probably comparable quality.
Yeah, it sounds good. A little more than I paid for what I have, but yeah, why not? I mean, it's all good. I mean, yeah, it's got the usual coil thing for the soldering iron itself to hold it up, and got some sort of high temperature material at the end to align the shaft of the soldering iron to insulate it against before touching the coil too much. So yeah, it's all in all, it's pretty good. Anybody else have anything that they've run across that might want to recommend to Jim? The comment, go.
Yeah, right now I just Googled that, and the one that they sell at Wayne Electronics, I think is the same one that I'm looking at Amazon. It's about $20.
Yeah, it very well could be.
At $20, though, I'm nervous when I buy that inexpensive, though. I'm afraid it won't last, you know what I mean?
Well, just to put it in perspective, take it on, you know, little adventures where I'm doing remote soldering and things like that. And let me tell you, it stood up pretty well for me.
I'll take a look. The second part of the question is, I've been looking at YouTubes now that I've been making coaxial cables the correct way. I bought a nice crimper from Davis RF on Randy's recommendation, which works pretty well. But I've been watching YouTubes, and some of the guys use a stripper to remove the insulation, and it takes me, as I struggle with an X-Acto knife, minutes to do it. And I'm on YouTube and I see guys using this tool, and it's they do it in seconds. The tool I saw, he used it to remove the outer jacket and the inner insulation, and looked like a cylinder almost, and he was turning it like a pencil sharpener, and he was done in seconds, where it takes me minutes, and his looked neater than mine. So any comments on that?
Comment?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim, this is Randy. I possess a number of those, a couple of them from Times Microwave that are designed specifically for Eagles, and then the thinner LMR 240, and similar cables, and they work very well, and they're very clean. I also have another couple of similar cylindrical strippers from a different manufacturer who escapes me at the moment. I think I got them from DX Engineering, and they work well too. The one thing you have to keep in mind is that all of them are designed for a specific manufacturer's connectors. So I've used them with, in effect, off-brand connectors as well. So after your initial stripping adventure that takes only seconds, as you mentioned, you may have to do some follow-up trimming with an X-Acto knife or something similar. So if you're using the connectors they were designed for, they'll work perfectly every time. Back to net.
There is something else to consider too, and that is what I call the finger strippers. And basically, they have a V-shaped aperture with a blade buried in it. Then the V-shaped aperture is sized for the type of cable that you have, and you might have multiple apertures along the axis. And you basically hold it together and then spin it on your finger, and it slices off, depending on how you set it up, just the insulation and the shield, and having to get the insulation, the dielectric. So there's a couple of different solutions. If, you know, you have a specific connector in mind for a specific cable, I would buy the kind of device that Randy has, you know, the cylindrical ones, and go with that. They're a little pricey, but man, they're quick, and the repeatability is just, I would agree. Anybody else have thoughts for Jim?
So Randy, which of the number of these that you own that you would recommend? Would it be the DX Engineering, the $49 one?
Yeah, you know, that works fine too. I really like the ones I got from the Times Microwave ones. I don't remember the cost. I got those from Davis RF as well as part of a larger purchase, so it's been a while. I don't remember, as I said, what was on the invoice. If you're available to come down to the Fair Lawn Club tomorrow evening, or some Friday that you might be available, I could bring the collection along and some cable ends and show you what they look like. I mean, there's nothing better than having the thing in your hand to see if it, you know, works for you. So let me know if that would work. WU2S back to net.
Okay, that sounds good, Randy. Fridays aren't the best for me, but maybe we could talk offline, work out some other time.
Okay, well, we'll do that. Give me a shout or, email me, call sign at ARRLnet.net, and I'll be happy to work out a sked with you. Back to net.
Okie doke. Very good. Anybody else have comments for Jim?
And see what we get. Okay, thanks everybody for your input.
E2EIR with an additional comment.
I thought there might be more. Go ahead, Howie.
Okay, and by the way, I do want to list a question when you get around to having that. Okay, I have a coaxial cable stripper, which I paid, actually I have two of them. I think this is model HT322S3. One's for RG58 and one and 59. The other one's for RG8 and 11. By Hanlong Tools, obviously a Chinese thing. In fact, it says made in Taiwan. And I bought this for about $10 from one of the companies, I can't remember which. And I found it works okay, but it does speed things up, but it's not perfect. But I also have something I bought from Radio Shack years ago, much smaller, a little cruder. Basically, its little blade allows, the device allows me to just go in a circle around the coax and it cuts, you know, the blade cuts, and I can put it where I want it, and that helps me strip the coax much more efficiently. And I still use things like dial cutters and that kind of thing. And I don't find, I often spend close to an hour on a coax connector, but now they come out right. That's all I can say about that part. So that's my approach. And I just am against spending a lot of money on a tool like this, because I find none of them work quite right. Maybe if you do spend $50 or $100, it will. And maybe for certain coax like LMR 400, it may be the thing. But that's another man's opinion. Back to Net Control. This is K2EIR.
Thanks for the input, Howie. Now, I have a question for you. You said that it allows you to cut in a circle around the outer jacket. Can you also cut the inner piece of insulation also, or so you can do two types of cuts with it?
The ones in particular, not the Radio Shack. Well, even the Radio Shack, I think, does multiple cuts. I think this thing, let me get it out of the package, because they always put it back in the package. I think it has three blades. I'm trying to take a look at it right now. Oh, this is one of the others. Like I said, I have a couple of them. This one, I see two blades. And by the way, they're adjustable. They typically give you, it's like they're making provision for three blades, actually. There are three blades, and at the bottom of the thing, there's like a place for an Allen wrench. They give you an Allen wrench, or you can just use an Allen wrench and adjust the height of the or depth of the blades inside the tool. So each one, and it takes a while to get those just right, but if you do it just right, it works very well on the coax, but as they say, not perfectly. Maybe if I spent more time at it, it would work perfectly, but I've never been able to get that far. Sorry for a long answer, but that does answer your question, I hope.
All right, sounds good. I'll poke around on the internet and see what's available, and I hear what you're saying. It's imperfect, but when I use the X-Acto knife, it's also imperfect. I'm hoping to improve a bit with a special tool, but we'll see.
I just think, following Randy's advice, that if the tool matches the coax and the connector is planned to use, you know, great success, and the simpler operation will not take you that much time, et cetera, et cetera. Lowball stuff, start jury-rigging stuff, it's going to be complicated, maybe not cost-efficient. Having said that, you know, the assumption of using those dollar tools is that you're going to do thousands of those connectors, hundreds, so challenging at times. May, but it may be quite a few years before you get your ROI. But aggravation is, at time, is worth something, so I'm all in favor of it. Anyway, I think we also have a question about the second aspect. Tim, was there a second part to this, or was that, was the second part, I guess, right?
Jim, I have two numbers to give you.
Part, thanks.
Hey, go ahead, Howie.
Yeah, I have two numbers to pass along to Jim that he might be able to do an internet search on it. One is HT-312B. That's 312B. HT-312B. The other one is HT, again, Hotel Tango, 322 Sierra 3. 322S3. And again, this company is called Hanlon Tools. Obviously a Chinese company, but those are the strippers I have, and I, again, without spending a lot of money, they do work, and I think it's worth it. It should be the first try. If I could get the Radio Shack tool again, I'd recommend that, but I don't think you can. K2EIR.
Very good. Very good. All right, anything else, Jim? Okay, I'll take that as a no. All righty. Mr. Randy, who's up next?
Let's see. If we're doing questions, do you want to do questions first, or do you want to get comments?
A couple of comments first.
Okay, then next on our list is Mr. Rick, W2LCN, with a comment.
Hello, K2BAR, this is W2LCN. A couple of quick things. We have the May 2nd is the annual Jacksonville Chapel 5K run, and we're going to look for a couple of volunteers. We've got a few already, and it's a little bit different course. It's in Lincoln Park. So we are going to have about five positions to fill up, and we've got about four operators that are going to come out right now. Anyone who'd like to come out and join us, we would love to have you. You can get in touch with me at whiskey2limacharlienovember@arrl.net, or I'm down in Fairlawn on Fridays. You can pass along that. But it should be a good time to get out and train and see what's going on. It should be a fairly quick day, something between 8 and about 11 o'clock, and we'll be all wrapped up. So that's my first point, so I will send it back over to K2BAR, and I got a couple of other quick things, just thank you, so let me send it back to Nett and see if anybody has any comments.
Alrighty, so you need some volunteers for the Jacksonville Chapel run on May 2nd, Saturday. Alrighty, Rick, I'll check on my schedule, hockey schedule, to make sure that not far, far away, but generally Saturday mornings are good if I'm home, so beautiful thing. Looking forward to it. Be happy to do what I did last year if you want, but it's entirely up to you. Alrighty, let's see, anybody else want to get in touch with Rick at this time, or with a question about the chapel run? Okay, Rick, if you could send me some details, just short write-up, et cetera, and dual time issue stuff, I will circulate it to a couple of email groups and provide some extra volunteers.
All right, wonderful, Gordon. I'll send you those details. Yeah, I'll have that put together probably over this weekend. But should be another nice time. We're moving to a little different location. It's a fairly long out and back course, and we've got a couple of nice spots to set up along the way, so it should be kind of fun. Let me give you two other quick comments. One's a thank you to WI2W. He helped me set up this NFED transformer for an antenna we're going to use for some camping, and it is awesome. I love it. It's such a compact little thing, and I'm pretty thrilled about that. And the last thing is we had some interest in this whole thing called ham radio. Had led a group of people to reach out and get in touch with some folks at NASA about a number of other things, and we are going to be on our way down sometime in late May down to NASA in Maryland, and we put together a beautiful little GoFundMe page with a story on it and some other things, and it's been pretty exciting, but it all came directly from the idea of ham radio and Pico balloons and remote sensing and some of the things that I was able to be a part of at the Teachers Institute over the past couple of summers. So pretty good stuff. I just wanted to pass it along and send it out there, but that's about it. So this is W2LCN. I'll send it back over to the net, K2BAR.
Well, that's great, Rick. That's super. On a related note, there are several of us trying to get together and put together an effort very quickly to get a NASA contact.
If you need any help with it, let me know. I'll be happy to jump on in. I don't know who you've got working with it, but there's usually a little bit of leeway speaking with a few people at the ARRL to kind of help that along.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, I'll explain the details if it tours, but to get at least into this weekend with a couple of more key players, someone came to me and asked if we could do it. No slouch in his own ramp, but he's never done it. I want to get a hold of Steve, W-I-T-W, and right away, so it's going to be a little tricky because I think my relative's coming in. Alrighty, we'll see. Any more, Mr. Rick?
No, that is all for now. I'll probably be able to make the next this Thursday and next Thursday because I've got the, we're off for Good Friday tomorrow, and we begin our spring break period, so things have been going pretty good, and no, that's it. So I was anxious to get back out and onto the net, catch up with a few of you guys, so K2BAR, W2LTN. Thank you for your time. You guys are awesome.
Okie doke, and we may have a quick welding opportunity for Mother next week. If the gods so allow, probably Thursday, if available. But got some uprights we need to secure. Anyway, let's see. What. All right. Randy, who's next?
I think I am. I've got a quick comment here.
Comment away.
Okay, thank you, Gordon. Good evening, everyone on the net. Quick update on some mesh-related items. As many of you know, you've heard me talk about mesh networking frequently, and the new mesh website, Arden, that's ARDN.org, where you'll find all the latest software for the Ubiquiti nodes. There's an awful lot going on behind the scenes that I can't talk about. I'm not going to pre-announce anything, but if you go out to the website, you'll start to get some understanding of how quickly things are developing in that space, and I think if you watch over the next 8 to 10 weeks, you'll see some quite astonishing developments. Should be exciting for everybody, create a lot more opportunities and a lot more capabilities. On a specific note, there were a number of questions that came up on the Arden forum regarding various types of network switches that can be used. And the standard network switch that's recommended for all situations is a Netgear piece of equipment, either a GS105E as an Echo or a GS108 Echo, and those work under all the conditions that we can imagine. Let me drop this. There are other switches that people have looked at, some slightly more expensive, some a lot less expensive. And two that come to mind are the TP-Link switch. They also have a 5 and an 8-port switch. And we've come to find out that due to a design constraint that TP-Link put into it, the switch is not usable for... it's not usable with two Ubiquiti nodes on it, operating two separate VLANs. You can use it as, in effect, a port extender where you can have a Ubiquiti now with three or more extra ports. You can put a laptop or several computers and an internet connection and several cameras on it. Works just fine. And you can have a separate Ubiquiti node as long as you turn DHCP off on it, so you can do device-to-device. So those conditions, it works okay, but it takes a little fooling around with. The other switch that's actually made by Ubiquiti, it's called a TUP switch, and it has some constraints as well, but it has a unique feature in that in the 5-port, well, there's a 5-port and an 8-port switch, and each of the ports will support power over Ethernet to the Ubiquiti standard, which is 24 volts, which is sort of their take on it's not the IEEE standard of 48 volts, but you can switch the power over Ethernet on and off individually on each individual port. The 8-port model of their TUP switch supports both 24 and 48 volts. So it's a little more expensive switch, but if you're looking at complex situations, it may be the thing to look for. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to net control.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Randy. We've got some tests going tomorrow at a couple of marquee sites. See if we can link at both 900 and at 2.4 gig Ubiquiti only equipment in play. That should be a telling story. We're pretty excited about it, and we will let you know in the ensuing days, probably if you just listen here or at 442 or wherever else we tend to hang around, those locally or those are most of us where we hang around, find out how that adventure goes tomorrow, which will be done in the rain, but TDD, it's when the time allows. My gosh and my golly, we're going to get her done. So anyway, I'm pretty excited about that. And any other questions or comments on this topic for Randy?
Nothing more for me.
Anything for Randy?
K2GFM, I'm just curious, what's the value proposition? What are we expecting to achieve with this that, can add some value to what we already have technology-wise?
Randy, do you want to handle it?
Okay, well, I'll take an initial stab at it. Yeah, that's a great question, Greg, and I guess there's a number of fairly long answers. Briefly, the capability we're talking about offers at a fairly affordable price point the ability to stand up a high-speed, high-capacity data network, an RF-based data network that would be suitable, our primary target audience is emergency communications, but it could be used and has been used for local community use, in effect standing up kind of a private internet. And so it offers an alternative means to commercial interests of providing that sort of data communications network.
Yeah, one other big point is that really get people to understand, I mean, as much as a teaching thing is, it is a practical thing too, right? If you have a platform that you can really good grip on networking at 900 megs, 2.2, 3 gigs, and also 5.8 gigs, that's going to be a huge expansion of our capability. Then we can move on to services, which are also emerging. So imagine this, you can create your own little VPN, an amateur radio VPN that could be regional or global or both, that has a set of services that you don't have to worry about, generally speaking, too much hacking going on. So you can move to a trust network management model or a trusted peer model. There's other operational considerations as well, which are kind of neat, which I'm sure you can understand, Greg.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. I'm interested also, I'm a very, very, very green member of our local OEM RACES CERT program here in our town, but I'm always trying to justify reasons for people joining our hobby, and this sounded like something I could sell, for lack of a better term, so I was just curious. Thank you.
And you're absolutely right, you can, and the real trick is, I think, subject to our testing tomorrow and subsequent permanent deployments, I think we'll be in pretty grand shape. That's pretty good. Randy, do we have any more questions? Because I need to step out of the car, and I may or may not be able to rejoin the net in a timely manner.
Yes, we have Howie, K2EIR, who indicated that he had a question for the net.
Okay, let me do this. I'm going to hear Howie's question, and Howie, I may take an initial stab at it, then I'm going to take my leave. You can always pick it up later if you want more of my opinion on something, but we have an entire gang here of knowledgeable people to answer your question. So, Howie, go with your question, K2EIR, and Randy, if you would button up the net if I have to.
Okay, well, this may be better for next week, because you may be the best person to answer it, but I'll voice the question. I've been to various entities that have presentations where legal officials have been there, and I've brought up the question of annoyance phone calls, the various scam work things you get by phone, and all these calls that I'd like to get rid of. You and I have personally discussed this before, and I do have a telephone system that helps me with that. But these legal officials, when I ask them, well, can we trace these calls and put an end to these callers that are trying to perpetrate fraud, etc.? And their answer is, well, in today's age, you can't trace calls anymore because of VoIP. Now, the fact that I have a VoIP phone doesn't seem to enter into it. But I just don't believe that. I mean, if it comes via computer, there's an IP address. But that's just an opinion. So the question really is, what's the answer? Can a VoIP call be traced? How many can be traced, or not a quantity, but if not all of them can be traced, how about some of the dynamics involved in this? And I'm also thinking, I'll just throw it out without making this too long, that I do know that there were some news revelations, maybe that guy who went off to Russia about who deserted the National Security Agency, that AT&T, among others, that the government had been tapping into all these calls and emails, et cetera, et cetera. So there must be a way. So that's my question. Can VoIP calls be traced? Can scam calls and fraud calls be traced? K2EIR.
The long and short of it is yes and no. Just like, can you find out where people came from to browse your website and hack your website? Can you trace them back? Yes. It's complicated. It is, if you will, difficult. And it also depends on the sophistication of the hacker. I mean, if they go to to great efforts to hide their identity, then it's behind layers and layers of stuff. It becomes very difficult. But, let's say if someone was dumb enough to pick up a cell phone or pick up an AT&T or Verizon voice over IP line and made a call to you, well, that's pretty dumbass dumb. However, there are ways to, basically have to associate the number with an IP address, the IP address with another IP address, and look at the patterns of the call and look at what kind of proxies people are using to hide their identity, to, if you will, break the continuity of the IP, logged in with a secure connection into one server, made an out call to the other, and connected, hairpin those connections together, then, the IP address that you would see on the caller coming into you wouldn't really be the IP address of the source attacker because he's behind yet another entity somewhere else. Then there's always the possibility that people just plain lie. There are networks that are just amazingly dumb, and you can claim to be an IP address that's not on their network, and they'll magically take it. It's truly amazing, but that will happen. And so I saw you were switching data from another network. That could be a problem, too. I mean, there's lots of... It's hard, yes, it's doable, and it does get done.
Okay, thank you for that answer. I'll also throw in a quick comment. I am using NoRobo.com. NoRobo.com allows you, if you have the capability of simultaneous ring, you register with their site, you put in their 800 number, and they answer after the first ring if the caller ID or the calling number is on their list, and they quickly add to their list because when, 1,000 calls or whatever are made in the same morning by people who have registered with them, they get the picture that it's spam. At any rate, what they do is they answer the call and give it a recording. So at most, your phone rings once for any of these numbers, which are what we would call spam. They let everything else through. So NoRobo.com, I highly recommend it. K2EIR.
Comment.
I'm going to take my leave at this time. Good advice overall. Comment, you got it. Randy, you got the helm. TBARW2TDD.
Aye, aye, sir. I've got the con. Thank you, and good evening. I just wanted to comment and second Howie's recommendation. I also have been using NoRobo for well over a year now. Real happy with the results. It cuts down a lot. I've also got a device on one of the phone lines, and I forget the name of the thing, but it's something I bought online quite a few years ago. It works well as far as it goes. It, you know, it has some fixed capacity of a few hundred calls, I believe it was, or 120 or something like that. So up to its capacity, it works. It has worked great, still works great. But then it runs out of gas, and that's where NoRobo.com seems to help a lot. The other thing that, to answer Howie's original question, the thing you got to keep in mind is that the world we're in now, in some ways, is analogous to the Cold War that many of us grew up with in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And it is an analog. The significant difference is that during decades past, you know, the Cold War was fought largely along the lines of physics, particle physics, and atomic physics, that sort of thing. Today's Cold War in the 21st century is all mathematics. So the Cold Warriors are skilled mathematicians practicing cryptology, cryptanalysis, cryptography, and their ammunition is all numbers. And so you got a thing you got to keep in mind is that anything one mathematician can invent, another mathematician can later disinvent or unscramble. The only limiting factors are the energy it takes to do so and the amount of time it takes to do so, but that's the situation we find ourselves in today, and probably will for the next 30 or 40 years, just like the previous Cold War. Back to you, Howie. Any further comments or questions?
Oh, that's for both for those answers. They are illuminating, nice or comfortable to hear as a discussion, as opposed to, they say, the legal officials to say, well, we can't do it. Okay, thank you, K2EIR.
Okay, thank you, Howie, and let's just ask the net in general, are there any additional comments or questions this evening from anybody on the net?
Connected N2OEL.
Okay, nothing heard. Well, thank you all for participating in the Barrett Technical Net again this evening, and thanks to the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. It's worked out, again, to be an illuminating evening. Thanks for the questions and comments. It's good to connect with all of you again. So we'll close the net this evening and return the repeater to normal amateur radio use. Thank you and good evening. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra.
Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, AC2GI.
WU2S, go ahead.
Yes, this is Rich. When you were saying no, is it N-O-M? R-O-B-O-B-O?
I believe, yeah, November Oscar, Mike Oscar, Romeo Oscar, Bravo Oscar, .com.
Second, I thought you were just saying no Robo. I wasn't getting the M, and I wasn't sure if I was on the same web, the correct website. Thank you very much for that information, and you have a good holiday. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf India. I'll be clear.
Thank you, Rich, and you have a great holiday, too. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra. Clear.
Now, let me repeat that in case, because I know I wasn't concentrating, it didn't seem clear. You know, Robo is like a robocall, a robotic call. com.
Now remember the mo in there, Howie. It's no more robo, no mo robo, as I recall it.
Have to go look at my computer to see. You might be right. I didn't think so, but you might be right. I'm sorry. I'll go check those. One of them will work, right?
Yes, indeed. One of them, probably both of them will work. I never thought to look for the other one, but I just remember that sort of that there was sort of a rhythm to the syllables. I'm sure they thought they were being very clever, and it's certainly catchy enough to remember.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you for that endorsement. I just hope this continues, and just for our listeners, Randy, the history of this, as I understood it, was the Department of Commerce, which maintains the Do Not Call list, which doesn't seem to work very well. When you register with the government and say you don't want to be called, and then no one's supposed to call you with marketing companies and so forth. But, of course, only the people who want to obey the law follow that, and the ones we want to stop are the ones who don't. that this they gave this guy, there was a grant or contest, and this guy out on Long Island won it by coming up with this system, whereas the phone companies will not take it upon themselves, the Verizons of the world, to actually block these calls at their switches. He came up with this idea that if you had simultaneous call capability, that you'd send the call to his computers, and if it was a designated bad guy, he'd answer it, his computers would answer it and give them a message, so they didn't get through really to you, and they were sort of warned, and I think it works well. I think it discourages them, because after I'm using it for a while, I find even if I take it off, I get much fewer calls than I did before, and if I leave it off for a while, they start returning. K2EIR.
Yeah, I agree, Howie. It's a great story, and it's worked just as well for me. And I think it's a wonderful example of what's often called crowdsourcing, where individually, any one of us or any small group of us really doesn't have much power or the ability to stop, let's just call them abusive practices, such as those annoying scam calls. But if you can aggregate all of the, thousands or tens of thousands of nuisance items that we all get, and that aggregation then becomes, in reality, something larger than the whole, and it becomes very powerful and becomes a powerful tool where, each of us as individual contributors, by signing up and actually being the target of these scam calls, we permit the organization to capture that and log it for future use. Everybody benefits from it. So I think it's a wonderful example of crowdsourcing, or in other contexts called asymmetric warfare, and I think it's giving back to these these criminals or abusers a dose of their own medicine, to the point where if more people do this, at some point it just becomes uneconomic to do that abuse anymore, because such a small percentage of your attempts would get through. So I'm very optimistic about it working. The more people that find out about it and use it, the better it is for everybody. So I thank you for bringing that up this evening, WU2S.
Yeah, I agree with you. The more who use it, the more effective it will be. I don't know how he's being funded right now. Again, he got that initial award or grant from the Department of Commerce. But I can see at some point where he goes back to us and asks for donations. But I will. I think I will gladly donate. I just hope it doesn't become an actual thief for service thing. But if it does, I have a feeling it can be reasonable. And it might very well be worth it. And some other time, maybe I can tell you about my phone system. Not on the air, I'll send it by email. Rather than use one of these devices, I have a great deal of programmable, and I don't want to use programmable in the sense of I have to write a program, but the folks who give me my VoIP service have given me a great deal of utility in exposing the calls I don't want to get, or handling even the ones I do want in ways that, you know, like telephone switches can handle them, but I'm able to interface with their switch rather than not being able to the way it is with the established phone company. So I'll tell you about that sometime. I pointed Gordon in the direction, but Gordon says, well, why don't you just hang it, lift up the phone and put the receiver down again or whatever, and just ignore it. I like to do more than that, and I think if you like nomorerobo.com, you feel the same way I do. 73, have a very good evening, and thanks for your help with the net tonight. K2EIR.
Okay, you have a good evening and a nice holiday weekend yourself, Howie, and again, thanks for bringing the subject matter up. I know it was useful for everyone on the net. Appreciate it. Have a good evening. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra.
N2OEL disconnected.
Listening.